IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Hillary.
And I'm Crystal. And this week, we're joined by one of IATSE Local 891's Leo Award-winning Damn Good Editors, with an impressive list of credits to his name, Snowpiercer, 50 States of Fright, and The Terror, Justin Lee.
So pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. Welcome, Justin.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course.
So let's start with your origin story. How did you end up in editing?
Origin story. Editing kind of came to me. I didn't know working in film was an option. I was in university and taking communications, and one of our final projects was to create a 5-minute documentary. So I paired up with a group of students, and no one knew how to edit, including myself. So I decided to get my hands on some software and take it upon myself to learn. I ended up pulling, I think, 48 hours straight at the very end, getting it together right before the deadline. And by the end of it, I was still in love with it and I had a really good time. So I thought I'd look into seeing if someone would pay me to do it.
That's great. And so I love how you define what you do in the film industry. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, I like to say that as editors, we translate the footage into a language the audience can understand. For us, we get this mess of footage from set after all the hard work's been done from all the departments to put it together and capture it. But for us, we need to sift through it and just pick out the best pieces to make it into something cohesive.
And do you find that in doing that, I mean, there is such a wide range of voices and audience you'd be trying to reach. Are you thinking about, in addition, obviously, to the director's vision, are you thinking about, what is the message? What is, the intent of the feeling that you want people to have? What is it they're taking away? You must have to have a wide range of perspective.
Certainly all of that. I think, there's both technical and creative sides to it. You want to make sure that what you're creating is far reaching, but also specific. I like to say that good art enables us to both find and lose ourselves. So in that, when you're editing, you want something that can reach people and is relatable for them to find themselves. But you also want it to be so immersive that they're not thinking about the editing.
Mm-hmm. How do you find you're able to work with the director to have a voice that complements theirs without getting into too much strife?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. You have to be flexible as an editor. I think, we do our cuts first before the directors come in and get involved in the room. So you need to not get too attached to what you're doing. But at the same time, when you're hired as an editor, you're hired for your perspective and your voice and what you can bring to a project. So you still need to have some firm footing and reasons for why you've made the decisions that you have. And often you'll have to justify those to the director. So hopefully, by the end of the director's cut, what you have is an amalgam of the best ideas from all parties, and you're making something that's better than it would have been without either one of you.
Yeah, and you tell a story about a time when a more senior editor asked you to recut something that he was either frustrated with or couldn't get past in a certain way. Can you tell us that story? Because I think it's those moments that are really career defining.
Yeah, it was a really big moment for me. I was still kind of the junior editor on the show. And I was working with someone who'd been really seasoned and worked with some really great people and had amazing credits for, shows that I watched, binged hard. And he came to me with a scene that he'd been working on for most of the day and just struggling with, because he said he just couldn't get his head into it and couldn't find a way to make it work. And essentially what it was a scene of the male lead dropping off his love interest with her family after they'd been on the run for a while. And it was her running up to the house, like after not seeing her family for years and reuniting with them. And it, you know, just became like a bit of a mess. And it was like more about the reunion, the way it was shot. So I took that scene and I kind of was like, well, what's the point of the scene? Is it just seeing her reunite with her family and making small talk and catching up? Or is it about this main character dropping off the person he loves and potentially having to say goodbye so that they can be with her family? So I took the scene and I made it about him watching her through the car windshield instead. He watched her go in silence, and you could just see from afar in his perspective of how happy she was, but also at the same time how sad he was watching her. And I took that and I did it in a few hours and I showed it to that editor. And by the time it was done, I turned around and he was like welling up with tears and he said, that's it. So for me, I was really proud because I could take something that he'd been working on all day and been really frustrating for him. And like, as an editor, when you get stuck on a scene, it can drive you nuts and like, you never want to look at it again. But to be able to take something that was doing that to him and turn it into something that was able to strike him emotionally, I think I was really proud. Yeah.
That's beautiful. So how do you, as an editor, then keep your eyes fresh? How do you keep building those perspectives?
Yeah, I find that that's one of the greatest challenges with editing. I'd say it's three things usually. It's fresh eyes, fresh ideas, and how to know when the work is done. And that's just because, you know, it's not like we do one pass, put the show together and we're finished. It's revision after revision after revision, trying all the ideas that come from, you know, directors, producers, other editors. And I think it's just about not digging your heels in and just being open to lots of different new ideas and ways to attack a scene. I think it's the same with that scene I described. You just need to shift perspectives within the scene. You're like, okay, well, from this version, I'm telling it from this character's POV. And then the next version, I'm telling it from the other character's POV. And, you know, sometimes that can dramatically change things. So, you know, for me, sometimes it's as much as working on a different scene or stepping away to watch a movie that has maybe the tone that I wish I could strike to give me some inspiration. But yeah, oftentimes I think fresh eyes come with time and, you know, having that freedom to leave and try and attack it from a totally different way. You can't be afraid to lose work you've done in order to gain something better.
It's interesting listening to you speak because I've always felt like next to the director, the editor has the other vision. You know, I know you're carrying out the director's vision, but if you have an editor you trust and you can trust their creativity and their sort of interpretation of what it is you've done, that is a winning combination. So I always find editors would be fantastic directors. And you said something about one of the characteristics that make editors good is empathy. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that? Because I think that's really important.
Yeah, empathy is an important thing. I think empathy kind of chimes into it in two ways. It contributes in two ways. I say first, you need empathy for the characters in your story, the story itself, and for the audience. So you need to be able to put yourself in each of the characters' shoes to imagine what they're feeling and portray it in a way that's truthful and relatable. Same with the story and the audience. You need to approach it in a way and put it together in a way that an audience can relate to it. And then from a professional standpoint, I think you need to have a lot of empathy for the people that you're working with in the room because, you know, with all creatives, the work you do is very personal and some people can take critiques as a personal attack or, you know, they'll take it the wrong way, but you need to find a way to describe it. You need to find a way to describe your ideas and come to a resolution for like conflicts and like, you know, differing perspectives in such a way that you're still able to be locked in a room together for like 12 hours a day mm-hmm. for the rest of like the month. Needless to say, I've worked with challenging producers in the room. And you just kind of have to find a way for them to like and trust you because the mistake some editors make, or even, you know, as an assistant that you make is you become to get contentious and you let your personal feelings get involved. And I find that just creates a bit of a stall in the work. Mm-hmm. If you can keep it professional and try to keep it about the work, I think everyone can respect that and find a way to move forward together.
Mm-hmm. It's a good philosophy.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's been your absolute standout favorite moment in your career?
Favorite moment in my career? I think it's still coming. I have a lot to learn still. I think it's one of those things where I haven't actually had too much time to stop and reflect on what I've done yet, because I just feel like it's a career still so much in its infancy, especially as an editor. I spent 6 years about, probably on and off, as an assistant editor, working my way up. But, you know, when I got a chance to cut the first time on like a bigger TV series, which was Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. So I had been assistant editor on season one of that and got a shared credit just because we got so backlogged with the pilot. The pilot was a lot of work, and I was the first assistant on. And that editor was also assigned to episode four. So episode four was starting to lag behind just because everyone was so distracted by getting the pilot just right. So I ended up cutting episode four, and I got a credit for that, that I shared with the editor, who, you know, was very kind and vouched for me and, you know, assured them that I could handle it. And then that went well. And then season two, I got to come back as an editor. So
it sounds like you're inching towards a stage in your career where you're going to be, or you have already, perhaps on other shows, putting your own team together. What is it you look for in a team member that's, you know, more junior, and what is that sort of mentorship process like?
If I have a say in my assistant or who I'm working with, I typically like to work with people that are just passionate about the project and the show. I've worked with people before that have incredible technical skills and they have that knowledge and background. But if they don't care about the project, it's tough to work with them, because you don't always feel that they're doing everything they can to make a better story. So for me, I like working with people, even if they struggle a bit technically, that are just passionate about the story we're telling. That's the most important thing to me, because I think if you're passionate about the story you're telling, you'll come up with different ideas. Like, even if it's like a sound, a music cue, like you're thinking about the show even after hours, and you come in the next day like refreshed and, you know, with ideas that can contribute to the process. So for me, that's the biggest thing. It's the kind of enthusiasm.
It's very much like, you know, conducting, right? You're thinking of a whole bunch of different elements that single people on set or groups of different departments have put together, and you're really considering the impact of each one of those elements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is a responsibility as an editor to all the other departments to showcase everyone's work in the most flattering way possible. I learn a lot about other departments just based on what things, you know, showrunners will want to put in or take out, because they're like, oh, we can't show that, like makeup will kill us, or we have to like fix that thing in the back that like is broken, because, you know, it may, props will be mad or whatever. So it's like there's a lot of those kinds of things, but for us it's like it's about just like making the best product possible, and I think that is just taking the best pieces of everybody's work.
What kind of advice would you give someone who's considering editing as a career?
I would say to just go do it. Software is so readily available these days. There's trial versions of everything. Just get your hands on whatever you can, especially like nowadays phones can shoot lots of footage. If you want to edit, collect as much footage as you can from anywhere, even if it's, you know, grabbing random videos off YouTube, and just go for it. Like the more you do it, the better you'll get and the more confident you'll get in your choices. It's a great way to build those skills and make sure that you enjoy it. And then from a professional standpoint, I think networking is important, because, you know, a lot of people in post-production is a very small team, and we're separate from everyone else. So, you know, a lot of times it's important to find ways to meet those people so that you can get into those circles and get jobs. Because, you know, we're, like I said, it's a small team and it's a very small community. So for you to kind of get your foot in the door, it's important to reach out.
And to that end, you know, someone out there listening who's gone to ourwork.ca and played with our skills calculator and editing pops up and they know that they've been editing iMovies and stuff and they really like it. What do they need aside from a curiosity and they know they like it? What do they need to get into a permittee sort of status?
Yeah, I mean, for permittee status, from what I understand, is like you still need to have some kind of non-union work experience. So, you know, part of getting out there and doing stuff is like working on shorts, shows, MOWs, whatever you can get your hands on. Oftentimes, you know, with post-production, especially if you can find a department that's hiring a post PA, that's a great way to get in and meet the team.
What is PA?
PA is just like a production assistant, but specifically in the post-production office. And I find a lot of times, you know, if you can get in as a PA, then you get to learn both sides of post-production as well, which is you learn from the coordinator who handles, you know, a lot of the more admin stuff and the business side of post, like, which is one branch, and then the editing side, which is the assistant editors. And just being in that office environment is so great for your skill set because you can learn to, well, what goes on in an office day to day and what the assistant editors do, what the editors do. And then, you know, as people get to know you, then they'll probably be more than happy to teach you.
And if someone were to go, okay, I want to post PA, I want to do that. How would you advise them to start? Where would they start?
So that would be where the networking would probably come in. You know, Vancouver itself has a few organizations for people in post-production. You could reach out to like the Vancouver Post Alliance or the Canadian Cinema Editors. Those are both organizations that, you know, are happy to put you in touch with locals that are already in the industry. I know that the VPA itself has a mentorship program, which I took part in the first year. So that's like a good opportunity to meet people and also get like, you know, tailored advice to help you find the right path.
So with the growth that we're seeing in the film industry here in BC, why do you think it is that more of the post-production is still going to other locations?
That's a good question. I mean, it's something we in post in Vancouver wonder about a lot of the time. I think the main reason is probably just that we get a lot of shows from Los Angeles. Post-production is a very long process, and after a grueling shoot, you know, many producers just want to go home. And if you can keep post-production close to your home, it does make sense to move it back to LA. With COVID and quarantine and everything though, you know, remote technology has gotten really great. So we are finding a bit more of that staying here now, especially if they're going to remote in LA anyways, then you might as well get the tax credit from the editors that work here.
And you can also find a whole swath of our editors, music editors, et cetera, on damngoodeditors.com, which is a sister site to IATSE.com and ourwork.ca, where you can check out the bios, check out the fantastic credits that our local editors have and continue to work on, and check out some of the great advantages of bringing post-production to Vancouver.
Yeah, I think there's also a bit of a misconception, I think, from people from out of town that our editors aren't capable of working on larger scale projects or that we just aren't up to snuff, I guess, or up to par with editors in LA or even Toronto sometimes. But, you know, from all the people I've worked with that have come from Los Angeles, they're always pleasantly surprised that just that there's no drop off. And in some cases that we're able to work very fast. I think we are used to kind of more condensed schedules up here, I think, for post-production. And because of that, we make decisions very quickly. And I think we're very adaptable and find ways to get around some of those hurdles differently than people from other markets. So
I wanted to ask about your Leo Award, actually.
Oh, yeah. The Leo Award, that was for Dead Rising 2, I think. That was actually a shared editing credit that I did with Jamie Lane, who has been a very great friend and mentor to me over the years. And it was one of those opportunities where they're like, you know, you come in an assistant edit and cut at the same time. And I'll work with you and, you know, we'll give you as many opportunities as we can to like see the edit through, which they did, thankfully. And he's kind of there as a safety net for the producers and everybody to make sure that if my work goes sideways, he can still save the project. But thankfully, I don't think it came to that.
Well, you did get an award, so yeah. I'm pretty sure it didn't.
Can you think of an example where you've cut something together where you know you have the power in the room to really dramatically change some kind of dynamic in the story?
Yeah, I think that's a fun part of editing, actually, is finding different ways to warp the perspective of a scene. And that's part of why we try to cut multiple versions sometimes if we can help it. You don't know what's going to resonate with people. So for me, you know, there's been instances where if you hold on someone just for like a little longer, get that eye twitch, get that lip curl, it totally changes the tone of the entire scene. So that's definitely something I like to play with. Yeah.
Do you find it affects how you watch movies and TV now?
It does. I have a bad habit sometimes of thinking too much about the editing when I'm watching a movie to the point now where my wife is also thinking about it at times.
My husband just tells me to keep it down.
Yeah. So I really try to keep all those thoughts internally. I mean, there's times now that where I'll watch movies twice just because, you know, one time I'm watching technically and the other time I'm watching the other way. But that's why my favorite movies, I know I love them because I'm not thinking about any of that and I'm totally just lost in it.
So 891 offers a lot of training opportunities to our members. Is that something you've been able to take advantage of?
Yeah, actually, I've taken quite a few of the courses offered by the editing department. Actually, and recently we've been invited to take part in some of the training programs offered by IATSE LA as well, which has been really great. So that's just given us even more tools to kind of, you know, stay on top of the craft. And for me, it's technical ones have been really helpful, you know, just to keep up with changing technology. You know, we work with so much like computers and software and hardware and everything. It helps you stay on top of that to make sure you're current and not falling behind the industry standards. But at the same time, I've taken, you know, courses for better interview skills and how to like, you know, build your reels and things like that. So it's helped me get a lot of work that way as well, because, you know, since I moved into editing from assistant editing, I've had to start interviewing for jobs again, which wasn't really a thing before. And if without those courses, I think I'd be worse off.
Yeah, we brought in Carol Kirshner.
Yes.
And she's fantastic. Yeah. She's internationally known for helping to coach folks through interviews.
Yeah, interviews. And then also I took another one for negotiations, which was great. Because, in editorial, you're negotiating your rates sometimes. So.
Those are also really great skills for being involved in the union. So some of our people listening are probably already in the film industry, but are curious about what the differences would be if they decided to join the union. So can you talk a little bit about that experience for you?
Yeah, for me, joining the union was a little different. To kind of like a side door in, because I just happened to hit it off with an IATSE editor on another show that I was assisting, and he had a project coming up where they need to bring someone on, and thankfully town was busy and everyone was working, so I was able to get permittee status that way. So it's a little bit different.
So in terms of then, now that you are a member, could you speak a little bit about involvement in the union? Because for some people, to them, the union is just how they get their job.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, because editing is such a small community and also like a smaller department within the union, we're all very close, you know, attending department meetings and keeping in contact with, you know, our department chairs and everything is really helpful. It's nice to know that you have that support and there's people to ask questions if you're ever unsure about something going on at work. There's a comfort to taking union shows because you know you have that safety net. Yeah.
I have a bit of a silly question, and I you may be like, when I ask this, but So we are often asked to keep bins of, or sorry, files of, you know, bloopers. Mm-hmm. So, and I know some editors that like just absolutely hate doing that, but I know crews at wrap parties really appreciate those. Can you think of a really sort of funny blooper that you can share with us? It's PG radio friendly.
Really funny blooper I can share with you. There was one on a show. I guess I have to say the actor's name. Is that okay? Yeah, I think it's fine. It was for The Terror, which you wouldn't think had a lot of funny bloopers. But there was one instance where it was a big dinner scene with this Japanese family, and it was George Takei as kind of like the senior member of the family. And he was just having like a really good time pretending to eat and chat with like one of the younger cast members. And it came time for his line, and they cued him over and over again, but he was just like having the best time chatting. And then finally they're like, George, it's your line. And he's like, oh, I forgot we're shooting.
What a great experience for the actor having a conversation.
Yeah, the guy's a legend.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Anything else? Never think of people being able to eat the food that they're shooting with. Like I was worried you were going to say he ate something he really shouldn't have.
No, I don't think he did that. He's probably too experienced for that.
Yeah, no, they do. They do often props, and we'll have a props interview at some point and probably get a story about that. But yeah, they have to keep the food safe if the actors are eating it for sure. Well, Justin, thank you so much for coming in today and teaching us about what exactly the editors do and how to get your foot in the door.
And that's a wrap for another episode of Apple Box Talks.
For more episodes and to find your fit in the film and TV industry, check out ourwork.ca.